white sands, turquoise waters, and the sails of traditional dhow boats out on the horizon. Little wonder tourism is the primary industry in Kenya's scenic coast province. But there is a dark side to the laid-back shore life. Heroin use has been on the rise at the coast as traffickers move more of the drug through East Africa on its way to Europe. Hi, my name is Jill Craig, and I'm the East Africa correspondent for Voice of America. Back in 2012, I did a story on drug use at the coast, with "at the coast" being the term used by Kenyans, and I wanted to find out what's been happening since then. So I visited Mombasa and Malindi, two towns at the coast where heroin use in particular has affected so many people. Farah Abubakar Hajj is wearing red tropical swim shorts, a powder blue sleeveless sports jersey, and flip-flops. He looks like any other 18-year-old around here, except for one difference. Farah has scars all over his arms and legs from injecting heroin. He started when he was 14. The circular scars are from misses, which means he missed the vein and hit an artery or muscle instead. The smaller dots on his arms and legs tell the story of all the other times.
I decided to inject because my father left and I remained with a single parent. So I had a lot of stress and I decided to inject. So when I inject, I feel very good. My mother is always shouting, but when I inject, I feel it's okay for me.
I meet Farah at Malindi's Omari Project, which runs outreach and rehab programs to help local drug users. Farah tells me he left school around the age of 12, and he would sell things to tourists on the beach. Farah hustles around town, carrying bags or other items for people. Basically, enough money for his heroin, and to support his girlfriend and her baby. His girlfriend has a drug habit too, by the way. Oh, and before we go on, I should mention that Malindi is beautiful. It has a dramatic coastline, where rocks and ocean spray stand out against the multi-toned blue of the sky and water. It's a place where children greet foreigners with chow, instead of the usual, "How are you?" Kenya is a former British colony, but Italian influence started to crop up here in the 1960s. Now, everywhere you look, signs advertise Italian food, ice cream, and other products. This is a tourist town. And that means that during the low season, which it was when I visited, money is hard to find. And even the high season hasn't been so high lately. Concern over attacks by Al-Shabaab prompted Western countries to issue travel warnings about the coast. The majority of those advisories were lifted last year, but tourists are still relatively few. People here are hustling to sell hotel and safari bookings, boat trips at sunset, crab dinners on the Mita Creek, everything. The most desperate salesmen are the so-called beach boys, who peddle their trinkets and more. They're disheveled and down on their luck, pushing necklaces and Maasai beads by appealing to your guilt rather than your preferences. "Please, madam, I have not eaten today, just buy one." Heroin addicts come from every walk of life. Men, women, children, rich and poor. But many of the male users I spoke to at the coast said that they are currently working as beach boys. Some said they used to have office jobs or their own businesses, but were reduced to selling odds and ends once they'd lost everything else. Some of them also sell heroin on the side, and the money they make from their drug sales gets almost immediately plowed back into their habit. I meet Fatma Jenabi in nearby Mombasa. She is the project coordinator for clinical activities of the harm reduction program at the Muslim Education and Welfare Association, called MEWA.
We've seen there is a total change in trend of heroin users at the age of 15 to 24 years. So this is very alarming to us, because if we are getting drug users at the age of 15 years, meaning that at the age of 10 years, they've already started using other drugs. So heroin is just a progression of whatever has been there before.
MEWA runs rehab support groups at the coast.
Assalamu alaikum. Kwa ufahamu wangu, meditation ya leo.
Very few people start out using heroin. Here at the coast, they usually try tobacco, marijuana, called bong, or Rohypnol, a pill that turns your tongue blue and is better known in some places as the date rape drug, or khat, also known here as mira. And they are also drinking changa, the local homemade, unregulated alcohol. Think moonshine. Many times, they're taking a combination of these. And now, more people are chewing moguka leaves, another stimulant.
Moguka is a new kind of a species for the miraa, and it's the one which is causing very, very havoc within the community, because young children are able to acquire this drug at a very cheaper rate of around 50 shillings.
That's about 50 U.S. cents a pop, and it's everywhere. It's important to note that not everyone who chews moguka ends up with a heroin addiction. But I can tell you that every heroin user or recovering user who I spoke to told me that they started out with a gateway drug before getting into the hard stuff. There are no recent counts of the number of heroin users at the coast. The last survey, in 2010, said about 10,000 people inject drugs here. There are more who smoke heroin. In Malindi, I go with two Omari outreach workers to visit the drug dens.
Stronger?
Stronger.
That's what she took.
And it's stronger?
More than this smoking stuff.
The little stuff.
This area has the jarringly cheerful name of Sea Breeze. A group of guys and a few women, who all appear to be around 25 or 30, are in an open-air garage of sorts, with bedrolls piled haphazard in the corner. And I run into Farah again. We watch as he shoots up, and I recall what he told me in the morning at the Omari project, when he was a bit more lucid.
Life is not easy for me, because now I feel I've messed up my life, but I don't know the way out. I just try to find the way out, and mother is very poor. My sister has died, and my mother left with 5 children. So there is poverty, and at home, I am confused, but I am not okay with the life I live.
Farah finally takes the needle out of his arm. His head slumps over as the drug makes its way through his body. He's just a kid. His girlfriend watches, near a wall with graffiti saying, "No drugs here." She lights up a joint. She says there's no heroin in it, but I'm not completely sure. Other users mill around. One asks me if I'm a doctor. Two others eye my camera bag. Several show me their sachets of heroin. A few others hold out the clean needle and syringe kits they get from the Omari project to prevent them from sharing needles, the fastest way to contract HIV. Several tell me they'll be starting methadone treatment within the next week or so. To me, their voices seem tinted with forced conviction.
One of them is
going to... The police?
Yeah.
You know them?
Yeah,
the police?
Yeah. They know us as well.
Do they know you from your old days?
They know everything. But you know, the only...
But the party comes to an unceremonious end as word of a police raid filters in. Farah and his girlfriend run off. The outreach workers and I head back to the office. Whereas Malindi is a relatively calm little town on the beach, Mombasa is like its frenetic big brother. Sure, it's got the ocean and people come here just like they do the other towns along the coast, but it's also got traffic jams, major ones. During rush hour, you almost feel like you're back in Nairobi. But there's a certain charm about the place, with its old town, its laid-back yet big city feel, and calls to prayer streaming out of the many mosques around town. Yet, like Malindi up north, Mombasa has a problem with heroin. Once you're hooked, heroin can be an expensive habit. In Mombasa, a sachet of heroin, or a sachet as it is pronounced here, costs about $2. On average, users are consuming 3 to 5 per day, sometimes as many as 10. That's a lot of money for Mombasa, where the minimum wage equals about $5 per day. It's also a lot of poison being inhaled or injected into your body. Oh, and you're probably wondering what a sachet is. Picture a foil gum wrapper, neatly folded down the middle and on the ends. A sachet looks quite similar, except smaller. And instead of gum, there's brownish powder inside. Users will do anything to get the drug, all to ward off the feeling of what was described to me by an addict as malaria symptoms times 40 or 50, which means fever, stomach pains, joint aches, the works. In the process, jobs are lost, families ripped apart, diseases spread. Priscilla Morah McCory is a 40-year-old recovering addict, 5 months clean, who now volunteers her time as a receptionist at the Mewa Drop-In Center. She is pleasant, helpful, and appears to have an eternally positive attitude, all masking a painful backstory.
I became a slave, you know. Somebody tells you to do what you can't, you don't want to do, but because you want to get the fix, you do it.
Priscilla tells me a boyfriend got her started smoking heroin at age 23. She says she never injected, just smoked.
My parents started to intervene. Maybe they wanted to help me. But I could not tell them what was wrong with me. They thought maybe I was bewitched. But I knew my problem, but I could not tell.
It was a swift downward spiral.
I became very sick. I became a prostitute. I began selling myself to get money to support my using. Then, after this all this time, when I became very sick, I got TB, I got HIV.
Her story is not unusual among female drug users, although men, especially the injecting drug users, also have high rates of contracting HIV and TB. Studies released over the past 5 years put the rate of HIV among injecting drug users in Kenya at as much as 3 times the rate of infection in the general population. Heroin is easy to get. Everyone agrees. Too easy.
It's easy to buy heroin from the hotspots than buying sugar from a supermarket.
Taib Abdulrahman is the director of Mombasa's Reach Out Center Trust, a drop-in center for drug users. The director of Kenya's National Authority for the Campaign Against Alcohol and Drug Abuse agrees. He told me heroin is easier to buy than sukuma wiki, the unofficial national vegetable of Kenya. Sukuma wiki is a Swahili phrase that means push the week, because it's an inexpensive vegetable that can be pushed or stretched to last an entire week. But I digress. With all this heroin, it's not only the users who are affected. I go to speak with Hassan Musa, who is the regional manager of the Kenya Red Cross for the Coast region.
If it doesn't affect you because this person is your son, it has affected you because he's your neighbor. He'll come and steal to you. He'll come to steal to your house, which means it affects you. So you are in your house, but you're worried. You don't want to leave your house because you know my neighbor will come and steal. So it has affected you. So in one way or the other, whether we like it or not, it has affected everyone in Coast Province. Everyone.
Fatima Mohammed lives in Watamu Village, another town along the beach, about 30 minutes south of Malindi. I meet her in her small home with a few other family members. She tells me that she has 6 children. Her 28-year-old son uses heroin. Fatima also has an 18-year-old grandson she says is worse off. I ask what that means, and it seems that her grandson steals more than her son does. That very morning, in fact, her grandson had stolen some of her sugar that she says was a gift from a friend.
I feel a lot of shame in the community. I don't even feel like facing them, so my self-esteem is very low. I don't feel okay for what has happened.
It's important to note that the family members aren't the only ones with low self-esteem. Users themselves face tremendous stigma. Hassan Musa of the Kenya Red Cross even goes so far as to argue that users delay getting help because of the shame.
If you appreciate this person, you understand his situation, you need to help him to come out of drugs. If you don't do that, he'll keep on stealing. And you can be sure he'll keep on stealing. So the best option is not to avoid him. Face the reality that this is your own son, this is your own brother, this is your own sister. You need to help him.
I would also like to point out that Sylvie Bertrand, a regional health official at the United Nations Office on Drugs and Crime, asked me to stop referring to drug users as such, drug users or drug addicts. Instead, she asked that I call them people who use drugs, to acknowledge the fact that these are individuals who are so much more. They're mothers, fathers, business people, doctors, shop clerks. Essentially, their identities are broader than their drug use. The UN uses the acronym PWID to denote people who inject drugs. Because referring to people who use or inject drugs is a wordy descriptor in this type of story, where the phrase is used so much, I chose to stick with drug users or drug addicts. However, it's important you know that not everyone agrees. One recovering heroin addict told me that only one puff exists between his ability to stay clean and a tumble back into addiction. Heroin is that addictive, the pull so strong, that former users have to show incredible willpower in order to stay away from it. So, we know about the estimated 10,000 injecting drug users at the coast, plus those who smoke heroin. But where are the drugs coming from? I spoke with Alan Cole, who heads the Global Maritime Crime Program at the United Nations Office on Drugs and Crime, or UNODC.
I wouldn't use the word epidemic, but I would say we're seeing an exponential increase in the amount of heroin entering East Africa. Now, only some of it is for consumption locally. The majority, we believe, is for onward movement into Europe and South Africa. But certainly there's an impressive increase in the amount of heroin coming into the country.
Most of the heroin originates in Afghanistan and goes to Europe via two primary routes, a northern one that goes through Central Asia to Russia, and a western one, known as the Balkan route, that goes through Iran and Syria, then cuts through Turkey, then southeastern Europe, to Central and Western Europe. Then there is the African smack track, a southern route that leads from Afghanistan to the Makran coast of Pakistan and Iran, over the Indian Ocean, landing in East Africa. Until recent years, it was a relatively minor route.
Well, Syria was one of the transit countries for heroin, and the border between Syria and Turkey is now obviously much more closely watched by law enforcement than it used to be because of terrorist activity. So it just makes it a very difficult and hazardous place to move your heroin through. So it becomes easier to look at other routes. And the northern route is more disrupted by law enforcement than it was. So Africa's the preferred option.
The heroin is usually brought to the East African coast by cargo ships and the traditional wooden boats known as dhows. Speedboats meet the ships offshore, transfer the drug shipments, and bring them back to shore. They are then broken up into smaller packages and often sent by air to their next location, usually to Europe or to South Africa. Some is sent to West Africa, and some enters the local East African market. Heroin has been present in East Africa for at least 30 years, but the big seizures here only really began in 2010, according to the UNODC. Fresh statistics are hard to come by, but experts say the trafficking is believed to have only increased in recent years. In 2013, the UNODC estimated that the local East African market consumes at least 2.5 tons of pure heroin a year, while the volume trafficked to the region could be as high as 22 tons. Seizures went up by 66% the following year. In 2014, Kenya accounted for 7% of global opium seizures, coincidentally the same as the United States, according to the UN. An Australian warship found more than 1 ton of heroin in a dhow, with an estimated street value of $240 million. Another ship and its cargo, including heroin from Pakistan, was towed out to sea and blown up on the orders of Kenya's president, Uhuru Kenyatta. And those are just a few examples of what was caught. So we need to talk about the supply chain. The user gets his or her drugs from a dealer, who gets the drugs from this supplier, who gets the drugs from that supplier, who gets the drugs from, well, someone else. And up the chain it goes. It's hard to find a good organizational chart. But whether it's fear or ignorance or complacency, no one wants to talk about who the drug barons are, those elusive characters at the top that have the greatest financial interests in Kenya's drug business. One of the most famous cases involves John Harun Mwau, a businessman turned politician and former head of Kenya's anti-corruption agency. The United States accused him of being a narcotics importer who used his police contacts to protect drug traffickers and imposed economic sanctions on him in 2011. I speak with Charles Changawa, the acting director of the Mombasa County Inspectorate, the authorities who assist the police in arresting drug users and sellers.
Have you heard the rumors that it's politicians at the top?
No, I cannot say that I've had any politician getting involved in this. I don't know. But I know people are using drugs.
If the top-level guys get away with their trade, those lower down the chain do not. It's the drug users and sellers who bear the brunt of the legal consequences. Changawa and his colleagues carry out frequent raids of the drug dens and other so-called hotspots around Mombasa. He explains to me that his team usually arrests up to 50 drug users and about 2 sellers per week.
We normally arrest them, taking them to court. But Of late, we've been coordinating with a non-governmental organization, at least to educate the youth the right ways to live without using the drugs.
And the notion that drug addiction is a disease, not a crime, has slowly been gaining a bit of traction across the justice system. I stopped by the office of Mombasa Principal Prosecution Counsel Jami Yamina, and he answers my questions about penalties for possessing cannabis for personal consumption, up to 10 years, as well as those for possessing any other drug for personal consumption, up to 20 years, as well as the trafficking of any drug, which could land the offender up to life imprisonment. He also explains that you can be fined up to about $10,000, or up to 3 times the market value of the drug, whichever is greater. And then he says this.
My personal opinion would be programs to rehabilitate these offenders would be a key and very helpful thing alongside the prosecutions and the convictions through the court processes.
And the problem has become so serious that religious leaders at the coast, where much of the population is Muslim, have started getting involved. Sheikh Khalifa Mohammed is the organizing secretary of the National Council of Imams and Preachers of Kenya. I meet with him in Mombasa one day, along with his colleague Mohammed Ralph, a local businessman who helps the imam in fighting drugs and radicalism here.
There are specific verses in the Quran that we read to them that show that the usage of these drugs is prohibited. It's unlawful. And they know that it's unlawful after they read these scriptures.
Sheikh Mohammed and Ralph do neighborhood patrols. They say it can be frustrating when they catch the supplier and he's handed over to police. But a relatively small fee, about $500, sets them free.
They pay the 50,000 shilling bond and they're back on the street. We are back to square one. So we have to look for him again. The supply goes on there. So what we have recommended them, we said, once we get this major supplier, the one who is distributing in these areas, they should not be given a simple bond. It should be a million or over. So they cannot afford to buy the freedom through the bond and come back on the streets. This is the major factor which we are facing now.
And so is progress ever really being made?
It seems safer to embrace what we know.
Once someone is hooked on heroin, what can they do to get help? An important step is detoxification, when the body rids itself of the substance and withdrawal symptoms usually come on, necessitating proper treatment. MEWA, the Muslim Education and Welfare Association, for example, offers this service to users in Mombasa.
The courage to change the things we can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
There is rehabilitation, like this MEWA Rehab Center in Mombasa, where about 30 recovering drug users and drug counselors are having a support group session. But there are only 4 rehab centers at the coast, each with a capacity of about 20 to 30 beds. Each rehab program demands a 4-month commitment, with price tags starting at about $120 per month. That's nearly $500 for a full program. A lot of money for people who may not have a job or family support or other means to pay for anything besides their drugs and perhaps a bit of food every day. Here in Mombasa, there's even the poor man's version of a rehab clinic, started by Farouk Saad, the director of Citizens Against Child and Drug Abuse. He started his own clinic out of his home 3 months ago, called Mishi Place, which he named after his wife. It's free.
Then I realized when I was working for rehab, it is only the rich people that bring their daughters and sons. Who is helping the poor?
A drug counselor by training, Farouk insists that his methods are safe, saying that withdrawal symptoms don't kill. What are those methods, you ask? Well, they're a bit old school. Usually, a family member brings the drug user to Farouk. Farouk lets them wait about 6 hours until the last heroin injection or inhalation has worn off. Then he tells them to go into what he calls the strong room, a small dark room with a mattress on the floor and a lock on the outside of the door. It sounds, and looks, like something straight out of a horror movie, but he swears it works. For the next 72 hours, the person can scream, sweat, and get angry, but they stay inside the room. They are given food, although Farouk says they don't eat much, and a bucket for toilet needs. Once the storm passes, they are then allowed out of the strong room and are given counseling. Farouk says that this work is his calling from God.
So you've had 10 people come through here so far?
So far, in the last 3 months, 10 people.
And how have they been doing once they leave?
4 already relapsed. I have 6 now. I'm waiting.
You're waiting. Mm. So do you think your methods are working then?
I believe when I help one people, I help one man, then I've done my job. Relapse is about the addict. He has decided. I have no... What can I do? It is his decision. But I'm asking them, please come back.
So maybe his success rate isn't the highest. Of course, success rates of rehab centers around the world vary widely, and relapse is common everywhere. Farouk mentions that he also had a mobile phone and a DVD stolen. Monitoring one addict is difficult, says Farouk, because they have so many issues.
We are saying, if you're taking care of one addict, you're taking care of 40 goats.
Drug users lie all the time, according to pretty much every person I met along the coast who deals with them. Even the users themselves tell me they lie to get drugs. They lie in order to sell something to get the drugs, they lie to convince someone to buy the drugs, etc. Anything for the drugs. Withdrawal symptoms can be agony. Sometimes people need more than rehab, or they need something else in conjunction with rehab. They need a drug that weans them off heroin.
Next.
There's now a medically assisted therapy program in Kenya, known as MAT. The administrators of the program, in this case the Kenyan government, can choose which drug they'd like to give as a substitute for heroin. Kenya chose the most commonly used MAT drug, methadone. Methadone works by reducing or preventing withdrawal symptoms. Because methadone is still an opiate, if it's taken improperly, it can cause a high and may become habit-forming. For these reasons, Kenya chose to have the drug dispensed from certain hospitals in the country to ensure that a pharmacist and clinicians are able to monitor people taking the drug on site under controlled circumstances. The program started in Malindi in February 2015 and then in Mombasa later that year. It was highly controversial in Kenya when serious talks about it began several years ago. Some religious and community leaders believed it could be easily misused. Now the program has grown, and so far it seems to be showing some success. In this hospital in Malindi, over 290 people have been inducted since the start of the program. But it's not always easy. Participants must commit to coming to the clinic for their dose of methadone every single day for 2 years. Here at the Malindi Sub-County Hospital's methadone clinic, the line starts forming at 7:30 a.m., when people take a laminated card with a number and wait their turn to visit the pharmacist behind a gated window. When they are called up, the pharmacist doles out doses of the clear liquid drug into small plastic cups. The patient takes the dose, gets a drink of water at the nearby fountain to wash out the aftertaste, then signs a ledger. I'm a bit saddened at one point when I see a methadone client come through the line holding the hand of a young girl carrying the laminated card for him. At the urging of the attendant, she reluctantly gives up the card so that her father can take his methadone. A sobering reminder that the drug user isn't the only victim in this story. But the program is free, which alleviates at least one problem from the lives of those who have so many. Several weeks ago, I met with Renee Berger, the HIV team leader for USAID, the organization which funds much of the methadone used in Kenya.
On the prevention side, particularly where it relates to people who inject drugs, it's really looking at a substitution program using methadone, with the idea being that if we can get people off of injecting drug use, we decrease their risk of transmitting HIV to others, and hopefully get them on a place where they can get back into a healthier lifestyle.
And while Kenya and Tanzania have some of the highest rates of injecting drug users in the region, according to Sylvie Bertrand, the regional advisor for the health pillar at the UN Office on Drugs and Crime, she says that Kenya has been proactive in its response.
I think Kenya is a star. I think it's really a
a trailblazer on the continent, not only in East Africa.
But methadone is just a first step. The director of Kenya's National Authority for the Campaign Against Alcohol and Drug Abuse, Sheikh Juma Ngao, tells me he believes there are much bigger things that must be done.
And one, tight our borders. Two, civic education. Three, rehab centers. Four, trainings and job opportunities for the youth. This shall try to cut down the use of heroin among the youth, because if they are employed, they shall become busy.
Of course, there are countless stories of people who were employed when they started heroin, only to lose their jobs once the drug overtook their lives. And rates of relapse are high. I find Ali Salim in line at the Malindi Methadone Clinic. A larger man, he stands out. He tells me he started using heroin several years ago because he wanted to try cocaine, and his friend and dealer told him not to worry. We can only get brown cocaine here in Kenya. Soon, he was hooked. At the time, he owned a car rental business. Ali's father took him to three rehabs, but in the words of Ali, none of them worked. He lost his business, then a subsequent job, then his wife and children. Now, he says he shows up for his methadone treatment every day, but even here, he keeps up his guard, saying he won't associate with drug users in any way.
I don't mix around. Even when I come here, I have my dose, I go. I don't mix around with anybody here. I don't go and sit in the groups. I like to keep alone. Because if you see somebody doing it, you will want to do it. Sometimes you could be watching a movie, and in the movie you see somebody doing it, and you're like, oh man, I wish I could. And you just fast forward and that's it.
We keep talking, recorder off. Ali tells me methadone tastes vaguely like Sprite. How he is one of the lucky ones because his relatives supported him throughout, taking him to the rehabs and never shunning him, like so many other users report. And how he always insisted on showering and wearing clean clothes, even when he was using. And at the end, when I ask him to demonstrate how one shoots up heroin, he inspects my arm, points, and pronounces, "You have two beautiful veins right there." He then encourages me to taste the methadone, since just a taste wouldn't be addictive, saying that a reporter should at least try it to really understand. Nervously, I laugh and quickly change the subject. Too many stories of, "I just wanted to try it once," are seared into my brain by this point. Sultan Hubeis, the former MAT pharmacist here in Malindi and the current hospital pharmacist, listens to our conversation. He says it will be at least another year before they can determine the success of the program.
Still a lot to be done for this program to be successful. We cannot just give those people methadone. Methadone alone is not enough. That's I would like to emphasize every time. I believe that these people can change. I believe that they also have their own choice. Everyone can make a choice. So unless they are being counseled, they are being shown that they can change, or they can have better life, they can go back to the people, they can live without using drugs.
As Ali says, it takes a conscious decision to not simply say no to temptation, but to actively avoid it. And he's got some plans for what he will do once his methadone treatment program concludes next year.
I was thinking I would go back home, spend time with my mother. I lost my father 2 years ago. So now it's just me, my mom, and my daughter. So I might go back home, stay with her now. With my daughter, spend more time. And be more accountable to her. Because I've let her down a lot in the past, you know. And now maybe it's time to pay back.
How are you?
Good.
Thanks.
And it is here at the methadone clinic that I run into Farah one more time.
Wacha mbebe. Na mimi sigari atunaongia hapa sasa ushaanza methadone. Sasa saizi unaanza methadone December.
A nurse is filling out Farah's paperwork, taking his pulse, checking his blood pressure, and conducting a simple test for tremors. Farah had tried the program before, but dropped out. So he is back to be re-inducted, as they call it. Giving it just one more try, like so many others here at Kenya's coast. And in the process, hoping to hit the reset button on their lives.